It's Monday, November 23rd. Thanks, but no thanks. We start here. As officials directly ask Americans not to travel this week, a million people a day are hopping on planes anyway.
They're saying, we are really expecting this to worsen.
Our team is serving real-world advice on what to do before and after the big day. Joe Biden has made his first and maybe biggest cabinet decision.
Blinken is a longtime advisor to Joe Biden, and that really tells you a lot about this pick.
This is not a name you know well, but that might be the point. And President Trump's legal team is falling apart, but he's no longer looking to win this in the courtroom.
It would mean you may as well never have another presidential election.
The alarming strategy to convince American lawmakers to just ignore the votes completely. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. We've seen how reluctant the CDC has been to make big sweeping advisories. They weren't going to recommend masks until it seemed obvious that they could reduce transmission of COVID-19. They still don't recommend schools screen their students for symptoms as they come into class every day. It's hard to do accurately, so we're just not going to recommend it.
With the nation having lost more than 250,000 American lives to this, and given what they've seen in just the last 24 hours, nearly 200,000 new cases, the numbers are simply accelerating too fast, and they fear that Thanksgiving will only make this worse if we all don't pitch in.
Well, late last week, as case counts rose, not just to record levels, but more than double anything we have seen this year, the CDC went for it and just told Americans, please, don't travel for Thanksgiving this year.
You know, you got to live your life at the end of the day. That's all it is.
Well, this weekend, we saw travel numbers rise, which means for the next several weeks, starting today, scientists are going to be anxiously watching to see how many more cases arise out of this week. Like you were worried about the 4th of July, officials are sounding the alarm in ways they have never done before. Let's start this pivotal week with ABC's Anne Flaherty, who covers federal agencies. And Thanksgiving 2020, like, are we getting a sense of what that is about to look like?
Oh, Brad, the numbers on this are just stunning. We hit the 100,000 mark earlier this month. That was a new record. It was double from what we saw in the summer. And then we just doubled it again. The other day, we hit the 200,000 cases per day.
It's hard to overstate just how fast this virus is spreading. It took the U.S. 5.5 months to hit 2 million cases. We've now recorded 2 million cases over the past 12 days.
But and then everyone, of course, is jumping into cars and planes this week. TSA has reported that it's the number of travelers being checked through airports. It's only about half of what it was this time last year, but it's still roughly about a million people a day getting on a plane and going to a different state. So when you talk to epidemiologists and people in the government at the CDC and so forth, they're saying we are really expecting this to worsen as the weeks go by. I just don't know if there's a peak to it yet. I don't know what we're looking at.
Like, real talk, if I go to a Thanksgiving dinner later this week with, like, five or, like, more than 10 people, how likely is it that someone else sitting at the table with me has COVID-19? Like, do we know? Can we tell?
Well, you know, there's some interesting data tools that are out there, Brad. And, you know, it really does depend on where you are and where your guests are coming from. But, like, Georgia Tech has this really neat tool where you can go online and you can actually, you know, set your how many people are going to be at your gathering. Say 10 people in Northern Virginia, where I live, it's actually not that high. I think it's something like a 22% chance. It's high enough for me not to want to do it.
Yeah, 1 in 5 chance somebody at the table has COVID.
Right, and that you might be exposed. But if you look at a place like North Dakota, Brad, I mean, it's stunning. If you had a gathering of 25 people, which is not, that's not even a large gathering by a lot of people's standards, you would have a 90% chance in many of those counties that somebody at your table would have COVID.
Yeah, I did think about not traveling. I have not gone really anywhere at all.
When you mix in that people are going to be getting off of planes and walking into houses and mixing households like that, I think that the chances are going to go up dramatically.
Brianna Owsley is a University of Alabama senior, and before traveling to Kansas, she got tested for COVID-19.
I have family members that are older, and it is better for me to take my precautions.
And of course, you know, everyone loves to say, okay, how many people have it right now? And they don't test that. That way.
So at first I got tested on Saturday morning and I was waiting for my results. I was like, I'm going to be negative. I don't have symptoms. And the nurse comes over and she's like, you're positive. And I literally started laughing. I was like, I'm positive. She's like, yeah. I'm like, I don't feel anything. She's like, you're positive. I'm like, okay. She's like,
the thing that I keep thinking about, Brad, is that so many people are asymptomatic and are not getting tested because they have no reason for it. We still don't have, how many months are we into this? 11 months. We still don't have a way to test people without symptoms routinely. And of course, that's not a cure-all. We saw in the White House that, you know, it doesn't help. You still need to wear masks and so forth. But I mean, that's pretty amazing. If we have 200,000 cases per day of people who've tested positive, we don't know how many people are walking around who have it and haven't tested positive.
But right. So it makes me wonder, like, after, say I do go to a gathering later this week or just get whatever, like I hang out with six people from like cousins or something. Should I leave that table and get tested a few days later? Because like early on, I remember us wondering if you were putting yourself or other people at more risk by standing in line and waiting for the test, or like, are you depriving other people of tests that actually need them more than you, and you're creating this bottleneck? I mean, what is the guidance at this point, this far in?
So from a health perspective, I would not be worried about getting a test. I mean, they have this down to a science where, you know, they have these drive-throughs and so forth. And I think that's pretty safe. I would consider getting a test if you're with people from different households, and particularly if they're from regions of the country that have high levels. The other thing that I'm telling my family members is that you might want to just take extra precautions in the next 2 weeks because we are expecting a spread to get even higher. So, you know, like my mom loves her water fitness. I'm telling her maybe the next 2 weeks after Thanksgiving, you know, she's been very careful, but that's not the time to go. I think a lot of people are going to still do holiday shopping. You know, maybe it's time to order from home, support the local restaurants and the local businesses from home and do that, you know, delivered to you.
Yeah, like, you know, your mom's been safe, but like, who knows what Betty from Water Fitness was doing. So like, is this giving us a new sense of like what our bubbles actually look like, that our bubbles are maybe a bit wider than we thought?
I think that's right. I mean, I had a conversation with a childcare provider about, okay, what are you doing this Thanksgiving? And by the time we finished our conversation, it became apparent to me that she was having over 18 people. Mm-hmm. So we aren't going to interact until she can have time to quarantine and test and see what that looks like for her.
A few days after the gathering, it was just, it was the whole entire family decided, okay, because a few of us are feeling ill, let's all get tested.
All 12 people who went to a November 1st family birthday party got COVID. And three who didn't go were infected by those who did.
So I think that post-Thanksgiving is the time to just double down on those, you know, health measures that we keep hearing about, trying to be as careful as possible so that you're taking care of other people in your community too.
Ann Flaherty, who's been checking in with experts both in the government and outside of the government throughout all of this. Great info, Ann. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
President-elect Biden has named his chief of staff and some key members of his White House, but he still hasn't actually pulled the trigger on some of his most important hires, his cabinet, the people who will be running federal departments. That changes this morning.
I hope we're able to be in a position to let people know at least a couple that we want before Thanksgiving.
We've been told that this week he will be announcing multiple cabinet posts. Well, last night we learned who will be nominated for one of the most important of them all, America's top diplomat, the Secretary of State. And the selection is not a blockbuster like Hillary Clinton or John Kerry. It's not even an eyebrow raiser like Rex Tillerson. The first major pick for the Biden cabinet is a guy named Antony Blinken. ABC's Molly Nagel covers all things Biden. Molly, I'll ask you out loud what I texted you last night. Who?
Well, Brad, Tony Blinken is a longtime advisor to Joe Biden, and that really tells you a lot about this pick. He is somebody who has worked with Biden for years in the Senate as vice president and even as a part of his campaign.
I think most of you know that Joe Biden's attachment to Israel is long, strong, and deep. And it goes back to literally the first trip he took as a United States senator.
And now he is joining the White House, is expected to join the White House as the incoming Secretary of State.
It is my pleasure today to join you to present the State Department's International Religious Freedom Report for 2015.
This is somebody who has worked in the State Department for a long time and now will be heading it up.
The failure to take significant measures now almost guarantees that North Korea will continue to repeat this exercise of testing nuclear weapons.
What does that mean? Like, I don't know him. I don't know his resume. I guess, what does it mean for America's foreign policy? Is this basically, hey, this is going to look like a lot like the Obama years? Is he like an Obama guy?
Well, he served under Obama, but really his ties are to Biden. They have a longstanding connection and relationship that has spanned years in institutions.
No agreement, no negotiation gives you 100% of what you want. But as Joe Biden likes to say, don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative.
Biden often talks about his own foreign policy credentials. He says that's the one thing he is considered an expert on. He would talk about that on the trail.
He should be immediately reaching out to our European partners and others and send private signals of deterrence and de-escalation to Iran.
And so picking a longtime advisor that he has worked with like this to head up his State Department really tells you just a lot about how he's viewing this role.
What President Trump has managed to do is divide us from our allies and put us in a situation where we're isolated, having pulled out of the agreement unilaterally, not Iran.
And because he knows Joe Biden so well, that can be a huge asset to him when he is on the world stage and talking with these other countries. They know that Joe Biden trusts him. He's worked with him for a long time. They know he has his ear. And so when he is talking on behalf of Biden with these foreign governments and other entities, he really is speaking on behalf of the president of the United States.
Right. Like you go overseas, you go to a foreign capital. People do know him there and they would know that he speaks for Biden, which is something like Mike Pompeo has that with Trump. Like people know that he understands what Trump would say yes or maybe no to. Rex Tillerson did not have that. So it's a big part of the gig. In a broader sense, Molly, I mean, you've been following Joe Biden for so long now. You've been tracking this transition. Does this give you a better sense of what this cabinet will end up looking like? Does it give you any tea leaves?
Well, I think if we look at the whole of these positions that Joe Biden has already named, you're looking at a lot of Biden loyalists being in the White House and in these top positions.
He's going to pick an excellent attorney general, an independent Justice Department, and that department will make decisions independently, free of politics, free of political favor in either direction as to how to enforce the laws.
Ron Klain, Steve Ricchetti, Mike Donilon, these are all names that have been around the Biden orbit and were a part of his campaign for a long, long time. And so the idea that Biden, the first people he's coming out here and naming are these loyalists, these people who have been with him throughout his career, really tells you a lot about how he is viewing the people he wants around him. He wants people he knows he can trust and that he can work with. And it also tells you a lot about maybe what you don't know, the fact that we don't know this name as a household name, but is somebody who is very trusted to Biden, shows how he is prioritizing how he's looking at this government.
And what do you say to Americans, especially immigrant Americans who came to the United States looking for political stability and seeing all the things that the president is doing?
Hang on, I'm on my way. That's what I say to them, not a joke.
After 4 years of Donald Trump, I think Joe Biden's main goal is to a return to order and a return to a sense of normalcy, as he would say. And so his plan is to put who he feels is the best people in place in these positions. So if that's somebody you've never heard of, that's not going to stop Joe Biden from doing it.
Yeah, like as you texted me last night, back to my original question, you said this might be a whole cabinet of who? We'll see what happens. By the way, a lot of factions to appease here, too. And we actually saw last night Bernie Sanders' top advisors actually came out very early on saying they liked this pick. That's an example of just some of the diversity of thought you're going to need. We'll see if this cabinet gets more diverse than some of these bigger named hires we've seen so far. Molly Nagel, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, elections have consequences, unless they don't. Back in a bit.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face-Off launches April 9th.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
At this point, this is how President Trump's legal fights are going in court.
They've lost 34 times. The latest last night in Pennsylvania, where a federal judge dismissed their case with these words.
Writing the claims were haphazardly stitched together like Frankenstein's monster. Adding the president's lawyers presented strained legal arguments without merit.
Basically, what this judge is saying is there is so little evidence here, it's not even worth throwing out one vote, let alone the millions the president is asking for. The judge threw away this case with prejudice, meaning you're not allowed to submit it again. The Trump team says they will appeal higher to the Supreme Court. But this was enough for Republican Senator Pat Toomey, who said he recognized this conservative judge's ruling as the final say in Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. And thank you very much for coming.
Meanwhile, last week, Rudy Giuliani organized a press conference on behalf of his client, President Trump, in which he introduced a team of lawyers handling their legal strategy.
When I finish, Sidney Powell and then Jenna Ellis will follow me.
It ended with Trump campaign staffers wondering aloud why Giuliani's hair dye was running down his face, and lawyer Sidney Powell describing unfounded conspiracy theories that she admitted would take thousands of people to pull off.
Now, the software itself was created with so many variables and so many back doors that can be hooked up to the internet or a thumb drive stuck in it or whatever. But one of its most characteristic features is its ability to flip votes. It can set and run an algorithm that probably ran all over the country to take a certain percentage of votes from President Trump and flip them to President Biden.
She was ridiculed so much that last night, Giuliani claimed she wasn't actually on the legal team, even though he had just invited her to describe the strategy.
Is it finally time for this to end?
Yes. And here's the reason why. The president has had an opportunity to access the courts. And I said to you, you know, George, starting at 2:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, if you've got the evidence of fraud, present it. And what's happened here is, quite frankly, the conduct of the president's legal team has been a national embarrassment.
And yet legal rulings no longer seem to be the way to overturn this election anyway. Instead, the game plan is even more ominous than that. Let's go to ABC's political director, Rick Klein. Rick, at this moment, every legal expert we've talked to has told us, you know, these lawsuits are not going anywhere. Nothing's happening there. So in plain English, can you explain the strategy for President Trump going forward?
Brad, it's no longer about proving that Donald Trump got more votes than Joe Biden, that he'd get more electoral votes. It's not even primarily about throwing out election results. This is about raw political power.
The president, running out of legal options, took to Twitter, pleading with state legislators to have the courage to overturn the results.
Joining me now, Michigan House Speaker Lee Chatfield, who met with President Trump on Friday. Mr. Speaker, thank
you.
In
the sense that what Donald Trump is asking, and his lawyers are asking, is that state lawmakers in a range of states simply disregard the results in their states and appoint their own members to the Electoral College, their own electors that would support President Trump.
There was this outrage that the president was going to ask us to break the law and he was going to ask us to interfere, and that just simply didn't happen, Pete.
That would mean, never mind that Joe Biden won Michigan by some 150,000 votes or Pennsylvania by about 80,000 votes. He would have lawmakers just substitute their own will, their own political preference for the stated political preferences on Election Day. It is astounding.
And wait, and just so I'm clear on how that works then, that's like the states actually send these electors to Washington, but they technically get to choose who that is. They're just usually bound by our votes. What does this mean?
Well, yeah, if you read the Constitution, it's one of those gray areas that never gets tested because it's so crazy to think about. But every state sets its law around how members of the Electoral College are chosen. And under current law, every state says you get electoral votes. You get to send the slate of electors based on the result in the state. A few even go down to the congressional district. But what the Trump campaign is asking them to do is to go back to the Constitution and say, actually, after the election, maybe you can come back and say, we've decided another way that we want to choose electors, and that is simply sending our preferred slate onto the Electoral College.
If we were in a different country, this would be called a coup, a political coup. That's what this is.
It's never been tried before. It's never even really been seriously discussed by a presidential candidate, much less a president. But it would mean that state lawmakers, Republicans in a range of states would just say, look, we know what the voters said, or maybe we're worried about the fact that we can't guarantee what the voters said. But regardless, we're just going to send Trump folks onto the Electoral College, period, end of story.
And there's like there are deadlines in each state that they have to meet, right? Like what are the actual working deadlines for some of the states that we're even talking about?
Yeah, well, the ultimate backstop is December 8th. That's the date that's set in law by Congress to force states. It's called the safe harbor deadline to choose who their electors are by then. And then December 14th is the Electoral College itself. But we still have a rolling series of deadlines now in both Pennsylvania and in Michigan. Actually, the deadline is today to have final certification.
In a letter, the RNC chairwoman, Ronna McDaniel, and this state's GOP chair urging the board to delay certifying the results, calling for a full audit.
Now, that could end up triggering further audits or even recounts. That's the case right now in both Wisconsin and in Georgia, where we saw the certified results by the Republican Secretary of State and the Republican governor on Friday.
When is the recount going to start? Will it be tomorrow?
We're going to go through the processes of trying to get it set up for tomorrow. But again, we got this over the weekend. We're going into Thanksgiving. Never done this before.
Really, what the strategy now is about delay. The hope, and it is a long shot hope of the Trump forces, is that they can delay things up to that safe harbor deadline of December 8th. And then, in their argument, lawmakers would have no choice but to choose their own electors, choose their own folks to send on.
It's so confusing. Listen, Georgia, it's just so confusing. We know you've had to count and recount. Why don't let's just say this election didn't happen anyway. Like, time for your legislature to do its job. That's how they would frame it.
That's exactly right. They're saying, look, they want to just sow enough doubt, enough confusion up to that deadline to say, well, if you want Georgia to have electors at all, or Michigan, or Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania, or Arizona, or Nevada, you got to send them on. You just got to choose them. That's the argument that's being made right now. And it would have to happen in three or four states to even have electoral impact.
But so then, if we're talking about not one, but like multiple states, because at this point, Rick, it does sound like my high school civics class, right? We're talking about dates and certifications. I'm picturing, if this wasn't hypothetical, if this plan from the president actually worked, and you had elected leaders saying, like, this election isn't legitimate, we're just going to elect the president ourselves. Just so I'm clear, like, that's the vision, like, that's what this president wants to have happen here, right? Like, what would that actually look like in real life in modern day America?
It would mean you may as well never have another presidential election, because you're going to have state legislatures that are going to be empowered to just choose their own electors anyway.
It's hard to fathom how this man thinks. And it's hard to fathom. I'm confident he knows he hasn't won and is not going to be able to win, and we're going to be sworn in on January 20th.
So you had this record turnout election where Joe Biden, won by 5 or 6 million votes. All of that would be tossed aside in the service of this different political theory, a legal theory based on an obscure provision in the Constitution that would say, never mind everything. We're just going to have the state legislature send their folks on. It would really mean the end of Democratic presidential elections as we know them.
Yeah, just because there's no trust there. Like, if this happened, there wouldn't be any trust going forward from either side. All right, Rick Klein, fascinating, bizarre, disturbing, all the words. But thank you so much for breaking it down.
Thank you, Brad.
And one last thing. You might not remember his name, but you certainly remember this. The Ice Bucket Challenge outrage began with a couple people pouring ice-cold water on themselves as a funny way to get someone to consider donating to ALS research. Well, then Pat Quinn saw it and turned it into something we had never seen before.
So I'm going to challenge Bill Gates.
I now nominate Madonna.
Today I nominate my believers all over the world.
Quinn, who had recently been diagnosed at age 30, convinced a wide web of friends to start dumping water on themselves.
Thank you to everyone participating in the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. You're, in a way, changing the world. We have a lot of work to do, and this is only going to help our cause.
So. Within days, the ALS Association was seeing tens of thousands more dollars in donations than usual. Within weeks, it was millions. To date, the Ice Bucket Challenge has raised more than $220 million. And it's had an impact even beyond that. This completely shook up how charities think of the way they raise money. Because think about it, ALS does not get on the news as easily as some other causes, and yet they figured out here the ceiling is way higher than they had ever thought possible. All you needed was something unique, buzzy, and even amid the seriousness of a deadly disease, something fun. The thing about ALS is, though, it's degenerative. It doesn't go away. There is no cure, yet. And yesterday, Pat Quinn died at the age of 37. He had told people this would happen. It had to happen. Which is why he said all along, his goal was not just to stay alive. It was to spend his days living.
You create your legacy every day in the way you live and how you live. Legacy is the story of one's life.
And I feel like this guy, who a lot of us did not know his name, also taught us it's one thing to do the thing on YouTube, it's another to actually send the dollars. So remember, whether it's the ALS Association or your local food bank, without their usual big events this year, charities are really hurting for money. So if you've got the ability, remember, a lot of these groups have never needed your donations more. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.